for all that Bianca has told you much of the housekeeping details while you're here. The extra things is you've already probably found your rooms and showers and getting to know the place. We try to make sure that this is a comfortable retreat center because part of meditation is learning how to relax very deeply. Just when the body feels relaxed and reasonably healthy and safe, it's very easy, or rather much easier, to get the mind to be relaxed and peaceful and at ease. It means the mind can actually meditate and always bring people's attention to the story of the Buddha, who was trying so many types of asceticism, really forcing himself, trying really hard with a lot of willpower and determination to try and find some meaning in his life, but getting nowhere. And then he had the memory of the time he was just a young boy while his father was doing a ceremony, and he was just sitting quietly under a tree, a rose apple tree, and just relaxing. I don't think that 7-8-year-old boys have really changed over so many centuries. It's very hard to see a 7 or 8 year old boy striving and putting effort into anything. For those of you who had children, have you tried to tell your 7-year-old, concentrate, come on? So even the Buddha, obviously a special being, but nevertheless was able just to relax, sitting under a rose apple tree, attaining a deep state of meditation, very pleasurable, very relaxed, very comfortably, and then just contemplating. Maybe this is the path, now that when he remembered that experience, that is the path to enlightenment. And he started to look after his body, not being too austere, not being indulgent, finding a middle way, and thereby being able to meditate and get some deep states of meditation and become a Buddha, fully enlightened. Unfortunately, in many religions, especially spiritual paths, we always tend to be far more ascetic than is necessary. To the point that, you know, again, this happens when I was in Singapore recently, just a few weeks ago. There was a gentleman who sort of said that, you know, he'd love to meditate. He was getting old in life, but he was afraid of going to meditation retreat centers where you had to sit on a hard floor for a certain amount of time every day, and you had to arrive at a certain time, you had to leave at a certain time, and you couldn't do this and you couldn't do that. And he was quite sort of terrified that it would be unendurable for him. And to me, I was telling him that, you know, I don't know where people got that idea of from, that you have to suffer in order to get anywhere in a spiritual life. In fact, it's totally the opposite. It's not to try and torture oneself. If you want to try and torture yourself, just go and do a retreat at Guantanamo Bay. But if you are wise and want to get peaceful and relaxed, then this is a place for you. In other words, it is following those eightfold, the middle way of the Buddha. And it's always also allowing you, no matter what age you are, no matter whether you're healthy, whether you are sick, whether you have this problem or that problem which we accumulate in life, that you all can sort of fit in and have an opportunity to meditate at your own pace in comfort. Which means that everybody, you know, can meditate. Just like how many of you came today from overseas on AirAsia? Okay, what is their motto? Now everyone can fly. My motto, now everyone can become enlightened. That's my motto. Jhana Grove, where it's nice and comfortable for you. So you don't have to be young and fit and tough. In fact, those sorts of people don't seem to tend to get anywhere in their meditation. But instead, we keep it reasonably comfortable. So, you have seen things like a schedule. That schedule which you have seen, you are not going to be fined or punished if you don't get up here. What time is it? 5 o'clock tomorrow morning? We do not have CCTV cameras in your rooms to check what you're doing in your rooms. We're not going to insist that you sit there, get rid of those cushions and sit on the hard floor. If you really want to get enlightened, let's get out of the bed of nails or the broken glass. Let's be tough. That is just so against the way of meditation. So instead, we have a schedule here, but the only two times you really have to remember, the two important times, are breakfast and lunch. And we don't need to ring a bell for that, because you will know then. I always say that, you know, sometimes people won't be able to get up for chanting, or they always get up for breakfast. They may not remember the time for the morning talk, but they remember the time for lunch. So what time is lunch time? They proved it straight away. So because of that, we just try and keep it comfortable. Not a scary retreat, but a comfortable retreat. Which means that people will make use of this facility according to what they need. In other words, it's not going to be forced upon you, but it's you to make use of this place. There are times when you wake up and you're tired. You need to sort of get some more sleep. Never feel guilty about that. It's not up to you, it's just the nature of your body. Many of you have been traveling, you may be tired. Other times you've got some energy. So if you have some energy and you feel great, just get up early. For a long time that I've had these retreats and haven't sort of rang any bells, I ring this little gong there just a couple of times during the day, but it's not really even a bell. The bells are very jarring, and this little singing bell over here is a much better way to come out of meditation. Even Ajahn Chah used to say that if you're very calm and very peaceful, and hearing a gong go bong, it's like pouring hot water into a cool glass. It doesn't fit. Sometimes it can break that cool glass, and it's too much of a change of temperature. So because of that, we just allow people to make use of these facilities. And these facilities are here. You see this beautiful hall over here. And we try and keep the place in the center over here and on the edge, you know, just a little bit clear, just so that you can come in and go out without disturbing anybody whenever you need to come in and go out. We have the meditation rooms. You can just see those doors are just open over there, and inside there is walking meditation rooms. And there's also one at the back. And so that you can, you know, if you want to get up in the early morning, you can come and sit down here, and you go in the walking meditation rooms and do some walking meditation, which means you can exercise your body, but not sort of aggressively. And it means you can walk meditation, sit, walk, sit, to change according to what you require. Nobody in this retreat center will be exactly like you. You are unique. You're one of a kind. There's no one else in the world like you. Thank goodness. which means that's only a joke. Which means that, you know, you use this place. And you don't just have to meditate here. You know, you can actually meditate in your rooms, and if it's not raining, just on those stupas. There's many little places you can find here in Jhana Grove where you can find some solitude. You don't have to always meditate on that piece of foam or on the chair. In fact, those chairs which we have, I've mentioned this before, that I went to a lot of trouble with, you know, the people who ordered those chairs to find the most comfortable chair for meditating. This center here was actually built as a meditation retreat center, designed especially for the purpose. It wasn't a retreat center designed for anything else, just for meditation. And even the chairs, we tried to get them in a way where they're not too high, they're not too low, you can lean back upon them, they're not too indulgent, but you know, they're comfortable to sit on. So that those people who find it difficult meditating on the floor can meditate on a chair. Those people who find it difficult meditating on a chair can meditate on the floor. And there's lots of cushions around. So you can get some cushions to make your bottom, you know, more comfortable. If your legs are a bit too sore, you can put a cushion underneath one leg or whatever to try and get your body to be as comfortable as possible. Because you find if your body is aching and painful, it's very difficult to relax enough for the body to disappear and for you to get into deep meditation. You're always worried about an ache here, a pain there. So we look after our body, we care for it, we're compassionate towards it. And that means the body can actually, you know, work with us. We don't try and control our body, we don't look upon our body like a slave. You know, we look upon our body like a friend. Because if you treat your body like a slave, it will rebel and fight against you. If you treat it like a friend, it will work with you and have a wonderful time here during this meditation retreat. And even when, you know, sometimes we have like an air conditioner here, reverse cycle, so try and keep it warm if it's cold, cool when it's hot. But you can't please everybody. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, it's hot, it's cold. But as long as it's, you know, reasonably somewhere in the middle over there, that it should be comfortable for you. Very fortunate today. This is unseasonal. We had a bit of rain, a cool change this time of the year, which is brilliant because it's usually very hot. Before you came, it was very hot, with lots of flies. Don't worry about the flies here because they are Buddhist flies. They just want to meditate up your nose because they like caves and dark places. So you no need to worry too much about them. They're totally safe and healthy. And they don't carry any bugs, so you can just let them do whatever they want. In fact, once when I said that at our city center during the hot weather, and I said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. And of course, as soon as I said that and he started meditating, a fly landed right under my nose. And I thought I'd be a hypocrite to try and it away. So I just let it do its thing. And this is what I discovered. Because you can get insight from all different experiences of life. So I just sat there. And this fly, you know, he must have been a Buddhist fly, or she. I didn't actually check its gender. I wouldn't know how to check its gender anyway. But anyway, this fly, it could have been transgender, I don't know. But anyway, this fly decided to do a circumambulation. That's why I knew it was a Buddhist. You know, if you see Buddhists, they worship a shrine. They always go around it three times. And that's what it did. It went round my mouth three times. In an anti-clockwise direction, that's what we're supposed to do, always keeping our right sides to the object of worship. And so it went around three times. When it's first circuit, one thing I really discovered here is the most sensitive part of your mouth is just the edges of your mouth here. Up here and down here is not so sensitive. So I knew as soon as it got past this bit, it was really easy. But, you know, it was really difficult. It just got past it to this bit again, and that was just really tickly. So it went round once and twice and a third time. And after it had done its third time, like a good Buddhist, it flew away. All it was doing is just paying respect, that's all. So it didn't really hurt. So everything over here is pretty benign. So fortunately, there's no flies in here today. They may come out later on during the week, but they're pretty okay. And anyway, you can make sure you meditate in here, or meditate over in the in your room, or meditate somewhere where, you know, the flies aren't sort of going to be there for you. But they're, again, quite safe. So, and how, when you get up in the morning, is really up to you. We do not have a wake-up call for you. Because this is not like school. You know, when you ring the bell, and everybody, you know, we take a roll call. Lee, present! Suwadi, present! We don't do stuff like that. In other words, because if we did things like that, they'd be giving the wrong idea what meditation is. This place will not force you. It will be kind to you. This place is friendly to you. It works with you rather than tell you what to do. So you find out when you need to get up in the morning, how much you need to meditate. Sometimes, there's some days even myself, and sometimes you meditate for 15, 20 minutes and this is wrong, it should be walking meditation. Or sometimes you meditate and then you want to meditate for hours. You know, you find if there's no force, you get much more meditation out of people. In the early days when, you know, used to teach meditation here in Perth, and those retreats we had, we would sort of, you know, ring bells. Somebody would have the job of getting up, going around, you know, not in this place, it was another place, in front of every room, ding, ding, the wake-up call. You know, and that person, that was the worst job to be given. That person got so many death threats. Or bribes, can you please, you know, don't go past my room, I'll give you $20. Because for some people, that they needed more rest. And some people already up, they didn't need to be disturbed. So when you stop all of those trying to control people, trying to control the clock, it's amazing, you get much more meditation out of people. It means that maybe in the evening, probably not this evening, in the evening you get inspired and your meditation's going really, really well. You think, I don't want to go to bed. I want to stay here and just really enjoy the meditation some more. Imagine if that was you under the Bodhi tree, as a Buddha to be, and 10 o'clock I better go to bed now because I've got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. We wouldn't have had a Buddha, would we? If you're just about to get sort of into full enlightenment, gong! Lunchtime, dinner time. So instead of just worrying about the clock, we keep it very natural. Present moment awareness. Right now, if you're peaceful, having a good time, don't worry about tomorrow or even the next hour. So if you feel really good and peaceful, just carry on enjoying it. Meditate. You don't worry about, oh, I better go to bed now, otherwise I won't be able to get up in the morning. So just relax and just enjoy. There's so much of life where you have schedules. You know, just airports and just having to get on the plane on time. And having to be met at a certain time, and a talk having to be arranged at a certain time. I always tell people, because, you know, because I'm the teacher, I said, you don't have to worry if we're a bit late. The talk won't start without me, which is, you know, it doesn't really matter. You don't sort of lose points, you know, if you're late for a talk. So it's much better to relax. All the talks, all the teachings are all recorded anyway. So it means you just take off that tightness and tension, which is always trying to live up to the schedule, to try and beat your personal best and how long you can meditate for, to try and get somewhere in this meditation. If you're trying to get somewhere in this meditation retreat, sort of give up now. You're not going to get anywhere except more fully where you already are. Stop trying to improve yourself. That's one of those things which I always object to, the self-improvement movement. It's always it's based on an assumption that you're not good enough. I don't know who told you that, but sometimes people live their whole life thinking they're not good enough, there's something wrong with you, you're not perfect enough, and you try so hard to improve yourself. And the more you try to improve yourself, the more pain in the arse you are to other people. Honestly, that's how it works. So if you learn how just to be at peace with yourself, that's where you improve. When you don't try to improve, that's where things start to happen. Just general kindness and wisdom comes. So, that kindness and that wisdom, that making peace with yourself, starts in just the general way you look at this program here. You're here just living in this moment, not trying to achieve something for the future, being able to be at peace in this moment, whatever that moment happens to be. And please listen to your body. That's called mindfulness. Be aware of what your body needs. Does it really need to rest? Does it need to sort of change its position? If it does, do so. Does it need to cough? This is just one example. You have this all the time in meditation retreats, what I call the volcano effect. And all it is because people, you know, just, they want to cough. They've got irritation in their throat. And instead of just coughing right now, they think, oh no, people will think bad of me. I'll be disturbing people. It's bad karma. Someone might just about to get into jail and I cough and disturb them. So what do? Because you are worried what other people think of you. I don't worry what other people think of me. There I go, it's a cough. Instead of that you suppress it. You block it up. And that's what we call the volcano effect. The vent at the top of the apex of the volcano gets all plugged up. And what happens? The pressure builds. And it builds. And it builds. It's going to blow. And when it does blow, much worse than that. And it really disturbs everybody. Even poor Bianca in the kitchen can hear you. Probably the monks in the monastery can hear you. And the prisoners up the road can hear you as well. And also, just like a volcano, you spread very unhealthy lava type liquid around all the people surrounding you. You're a danger. And you don't need to do that. Why can't you just have a little cough instead of trying to suppress it? Too much of human nature is trying to suppress. And of course, we never have any peace that way. So instead, if you need to cough, you cough. If during the meditation you've got an achy knee, just move it. Get it more comfortable. Do not endure with stupidity, with the lack of kindness. Yeah, if you've got a little itch somewhere, fine. A little fly crawling in your ear, don't worry, it'll go out again afterwards. Who would want to live in your ear for very long? So you can just do what it wants. So, but if it's really painful, then of course you move. I always tell a story about this one monk. He was a good friend of mine, and he's still a monk, but he can't sit on the floor anymore because one day I was there. He decided to meditate all night, not move, and just to go through pain. Yeah, he managed to go all night without sort of uncrossing his legs, even though it hurt like hell. And in the morning we had to take him to hospital, where he had a double knee reconstruction. Now there's something a bit crazy about that. But people do that. What are you doing that for? You know, you're not going to get anywhere that way except a hospital. So instead, we are kind to our body. There's something you'll hear many times on this retreat. It's called Eightfold Path. especially the second factor of the Eightfold Path. This is core Buddhism. And that was about learning how to make peace, be kind and be gentle. The second factor is the right motivations, where you're coming from, what drives your practice of meditation. Making peace. People have a feeling that, you know, Buddhism is supposed to be a very peaceful religion. It's a very kind path. But you go in some of these meditation retreat centers, and they're not kind at all. It's like a military camp. Which is one of the reasons why we never call this concentration. If it was concentration, what would this place be? Concentration camp. This is not Jhana Grove concentration camp. You don't see any turrets with monks with machine guns on the top making sure that you don't escape now you're here. We don't have guards in jackboots going around making sure that you finish your meal before noon and you don't have any contraband in your huts to snack at night time. We don't do stuff like that. This is not a concentration camp. So this is a kindness camp, a making peace camp, so people feel comfortable here, unafraid. And it's, what do we call it? We don't call it a concentration camp. We call it club. What's the next word? Med. Yeah, club med, serpentine. Club meditation, serpentine. Sometimes I say that because it's not just a joke. It's just actually getting people's understanding that this is a place where you love coming. It's not like going here because, you know, you feel you've made some really bad karma. Oh, crikey, I suppose I'm a Buddhist. I'm supposed to be good for me. I hate it, but it's good for me. Just like, you know, eating your greens. It's bad for me. I don't hate it, but it's supposed to be good for me, so I better do it. No, it's supposed to be what you enjoy. And after a while, that you love this place. And that's why that it's so difficult to get into this place. Because, you know, there's such a, you have to be really on the ball, be very fast to be able to get in. This always gets booked out very quickly. Why? It's because people actually realize this works. It's a very comfortable place. So much in the world, you have to live up to other people's expectations, your husband's expectations, your wife's, your kids' expectations, your parents' expectations, your boss at work's, life's expectations. There's so much pressure on you in the world. You can never get peaceful. You can never just be and just relax and allow meditation, which is, meditation is the default state of the human mind. It's what happens when you leave it alone. When you stop trying to push and pull it and squash it and force it. This was Ajahn Chah's simile. I'll get it out of the way now so I don't have to do it again. Put his hand up and he would wave it backwards and forwards like this. And he said, because he didn't have any visual aids in those days, no PowerPoints, you have to use whatever was just at hand. And of course, what's at hand is a hand. So, wave it up and down like this. He said, this is a leaf on a tree. Why does a leaf move? It moves because of the wind. Once the wind stops, the leaf keeps on moving less and less until it stops and becomes still all by itself. That's the natural state of a leaf on a tree or a bush. It only moves because of the wind. The wind stops, eventually the leaf goes back to its default state. We don't call it natural state anymore. Default state, when nothing else has happened. That's what the leaf does. It's perfectly still. That, he says, is like the human mind. The human mind only moves up and down, thinking, worrying, just planning, just groaning to itself, moaning and complaining. It only does that because something is making it do it. The winds of wanting. When you let those go, the wanting stops. You're just quite happy to be stupid. It's not against the precepts. People are allowed to be dumb. You don't have to be a high achiever. You can be a peaceful non-achiever. My favorite t-shirt, I've been quoting that a lot recently. Somebody's got one and showed it to me the other day. Nobody's perfect. Can you relate to that? Nobody's perfect. And then the next line was, I am a nobody, no self. Conclusion, therefore I'm perfect. If you understand that, you can just sleep for the rest of the retreat. You're already enlightened. So the default state, when you stop trying to perfect yourself, wanting something, trying, struggling, striving, trying to improve yourself, trying to get a degree. Oh, I even told this over in Sri Lanka. I thought they would know this by now. They said it's absolutely true. I was there a week or two ago. And they were the story of this old auntie, you know, who visited her children in Colombo. And you know, she was a devout Buddhist, you know, one of those ones who goes to feed the monks all the time and just listens to the Pirit chanting and just all the traditions and rites and rituals and stuff. But she came to visit her children. Like many of the old people, they sacrificed so much for their kids. The kids have done well, gone to university. And they thought, what can we do for our old auntie? You know, give her something which, you know, will give her a big treat. And what they found out, that not so far away, was a retreat center. Not quite the same as this tradition. And at that retreat center, it was about 2, 3, 4 weeks retreat, you know, live-in retreat. And at the end of the retreat, it wasn't just meditation, it was a lot of instructions as well, some study as well. And at the end of the retreat, they'd give all of the retreatants a test, you know, about their meditation and also about their understanding of the Dhamma. And based on that test, had, you know, these were lay people, lay teachers, and they would confer together and they would decide how advanced they had become. And they thought, their old auntie, that that cost a bit of money, so they clubbed together a nice treat for their auntie. Do you want to go? Yeah, I'll go. And so they sponsored her for this retreat. And for 4 weeks she was meditating and studying. At the end of the retreat, they gave her the test. And after the test, they came to her with a nice certificate. Auntie, you've done really well. And we're very happy to announce that you are now a stream winner, the first stage of enlightenment. They gave a beautiful certificate of being a soul one, a stream winner. Congratulations, Auntie. And at that she looked at the examiners and she was so angry and upset. I said, why are you angry at us? It's a wonderful achievement, first stage of enlightenment. That's wonderful. Why are you so angry at us, Auntie? And Auntie looked at them and said, you don't remember me, do you? I was here about 4 or 5 years ago and you gave me non-return a certificate. You've demoted me. and that was the end of that retreat center. A scam. We don't give medals or awards. As Ajahn Chah used to say, again, always put it so beautiful, you come here not to attain things, but to let go of things. Not to get more spiritual materialism, but to become less worried about such things. Or there's this monk who's very... if any of you were here when he was a Sri Lankan monk, he was one of these monks of the same generation. Sri Lankan monk, Kesridama Nanda, Bhante Gunaratana, Venmo Narada, who's the other ones? It's really great. It's great. This whole batch of Sri Lankan monks, I mean, they were amazing monks, but this was the fellow, because he came over to Perth when we first came over. I was first over here. And somebody asked him, "Are you enlightened?" You know what his answer was? He said, "No, but I'm highly illuminated." And I thought, that was a wonderful answer. Highly illuminated. Not illuminated. Eliminated. So if you get that idea, that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to eliminate you. So your ego, your sense of self, which wants all these attainments and suffers so much trying to get them. So please eliminate all of that. As Ajahn Chah, see how much you can be eliminated. Not how much you can actually grow more and just get more attainments and just like when you were at school, get your O levels and A levels or grade 12 certificates and then bachelor's and then sort of master's. We only have master's. About time we had stopped all this sexual gender discrimination. Instead of a master of arts, you'd be a mistress of arts. Do you have actually that now, mistress of science? I don't know. You don't have it? Why? That's gender specific. Just like I was in Hong Kong giving a talk once, and there was a debate between two masters. I was a Theravada, this other fellow was at Mahayana Zen. And I said, what would happen if we invite Ayahasapanya to debate this fellow? Next would be a debate between a master and a mistress. Well, boy, that's female versus a mistress. So Ayahasapanya is wise enough. So why do you call it Master Brahm? And so be Mistress Hasapanya or Mistress Wayama. Or Mistress Naroda? So, anyway, so all of that sort of stuff, we just don't get into at all. So, please, you're not coming here to improve yourself. We're coming here just to see how much we can disappear. And if you understand that, you understand just why you're kind. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. That allows you to vanish. Tough people. This is an important point in the Dhamma. I'm sure I'll mention this afterwards in more detail. The more you push, the more you strive, the more you build up your sense of self, your ego, your sense of being. The less you do, the more you disappear. It's the doing creates a sense of self. And when you do less, you're more peaceful. You just sit here. You find your sense of self gets less and less and less. You disappear. Your ego starts to vanish. That's what it says, being eliminated. Being highly eliminated. So when you understand that that's the path of Dhamma, you find it's just an easy path. What are you trying to achieve anyway? Even when I was young, I was always interested in spirituality. I always remember asking, because I went to scholarships, went to a good school, and they had a chaplain. It was an Anglican school. And I asked the chaplain there, so what is God? I wasn't trying to be clever, just I wanted to find out. Just what this was all about. And he said something like, oh, God is the ineffable. It is beyond words, the ground of all being, the essential nature, the ultimate consciousness, the indescribable. And, but what actually is it? Oh, it's beyond words. It's Alpha and Omega, like a street directory. And I said, not like a dictionary. And I could never get a straight answer. That's one of the reasons why I rejected that, because they could not actually describe these things. It never made any sense to me. And then somebody else came along, and when I met my first monks, I asked the monks, well, what actually is enlightenment? And they said, the ground of all being, ineffable, beyond words. And I said, I've heard that somewhere before. So, are you trying to get enlightened? Do you know where you're trying to get to? I don't know, but it's somewhere good, so people say. Are you sure? It's like getting on a bus, not knowing what the destination is. How many of you are getting on an aircraft, not knowing where it's going to go to? You don't know what's going to happen. But what you do know is you know what peace is, you know what stillness is, you know what freedom is. You know what happiness is, I mean deep happiness. And that is actually when you stop striving. When you relax and just be. Present moment awareness, kindness. Open the door of your heart to this moment, no matter what it is. Not judging yourself, not judging other people, just being here, being kind. And you find that that has the taste of freedom. It's one of the wonderful epithets of enlightenment, the taste of freedom. What does freedom feel like? You're free, you can get up and go whenever you want. Go back to bed, you can get up any time of the morning. You can come in here and meditate. You can sit on a chair, you can lean against the door, you can just sit outside and just watch the sun come up tomorrow morning. You're free. What do you mean by free? There's no wanting on you. Be careful, freedom doesn't mean like indulging in all the sorts of things you want to do. There are two types of freedom. And please understand the difference. One is the freedom from desire. And the other one is freedom of desire. From and of. The freedom of desire is just indulging to whenever you want, whenever you want to do it. The freedom from desire, just sitting here peacefully, not wanting anything in the whole world. Just be happy. It's the freedom from desire instead of the freedom of desire. So that's what we're learning here. And we learn that just by relaxing. So little by little, you get, this is just an introduction here and what we're really doing. Little by little I'll be giving these talks in the morning. The reason I give main talk in the morning is just set the scene for the day. So that, you know, it gives a bit of inspiration, so you get some instructions. And then we do have some interviews, not the first day, not Saturday. So because just people are getting into their meditation. And we start the interviews on Sunday, usually. But please keep the interviews to meditation. Please, no, not problems with your children or your husband or your boss at work, because those are endless, honestly. There's no solution to those. So, so just forget about it. Anyway, if you have brought your husband here, sort of, you know, it means that, sort of, you know, put them, make sure if you're in the top row of cottages, your husband's in the bottom row of cottages, and vice versa. I'll be there just there. Those of you who go over to Bodhinyana, you see in the wall, the pillars, you know, that's where we put the ashes of deceased Buddhists. I remember this woman, we did a ceremony for her husband, a Chinese woman, I think, I don't know, from Hong Kong, I think. So we did the ashes, and you know, she was pretty sick. She said, no, I probably won't last another year or two. And I said, do you want me to reserve a spot for you just under where your husband's ashes are located? No way, she said. I've been underneath that guy all my life, the furthest pillar away from my husband. That's where I want to go. That's what she said. I remember that. But anyway, so here you don't have to worry about things like that. So here you can just, you know, be at peace. No one telling you what to do or what not to do. You're not telling your husband what to do, where not to go. And that means you're totally free. Free just to be a human being. So we do have all, you know, a few little rules just to protect one another. Then we've got things called 8 precepts. We're not kidding anybody. So that's actually verboten. That you can't do that during this retreat. So you can't kill anybody, please. So you feel pretty safe. People are kind. So not stealing and no sex. You don't need sex on a retreat. Just be peaceful, be kind. It's something much more beautiful when you don't look at a human being just as an object for your pleasure, you know, for sensory pleasure. You're just kind, respect one another, which is a wonderful way of looking at people, not as, you know, potential sexual objects, but as human beings, caring for them. Yes, sometimes people say men are from Mars, women are from Venus, but on Jhana Grove, everyone's from planet Earth. So, you know, please respect one another. And lying, we don't need to lie. In fact, we have this beautiful noble silence on this retreat. You know what noble silence means? No bells. But the real noble silence is you don't need to speak. It's amazing just, you know, when we have this noble silence and people actually keep it and they don't talk to one another, after a while you find you can have this beautiful bonding between one another. You don't need words. Just like a little smile. So when you pass one another, you don't need to talk with one another, but please smile. Just acknowledge that, you know, that you care for one another. Because sometimes when people have noble silence, some people complain, it's so miserable, I feel so depressed. You know, I feel so alone. No one talks with me. So you can always smile at one another, and that's really all you need, a little smile. Of course, if there is something to talk about, don't keep stupid silence. This is noble silence. The difference between stupid silence and noble silence. Stupid silence is you see a snake. And by the time they try to figure out that you're not a very good mime, the snake's bitten you. So, if there is a snake, just say, watch out, snake. You don't have to go, you know, there's a snake there, and that's a particular species of snake, and I'm an expert on snakes, and you know those snakes, this is amazing, they only come out for a few days of a year, and they don't really eat very much, and don't go into big conversations, just say snake, and that's all you need to do. So, little by little, you find you don't need to talk so much. Most of the talking is just because you are bored. And you don't need to talk. So, little by little, you calm down, become peaceful. Just because you don't need to talk so much, it means you don't need to think so much. And then what happens afterwards is you become very calm and peaceful. So, don't disturb other people's peacefulness by talking to them. And if somebody talks to you, don't say, you shouldn't talk. Ajahn Brahm said you shouldn't talk, because if you talk, it's a very, very bad thing to do, and it's also, it means it disturbs everybody, and you talking really disturbs me as well. And you've disturbed her much more than she's ever disturbed you. So you don't need to talk back. If somebody talks and you want to remind them, what do? You give them the one finger sign. Not that one, this one. give them the finger. That's all you need to do. So just be calm. Also, that's respecting other people's peace. And in respecting other people's peace, it also means that when you come in and go out, please pretend to be burglar. Burglars can come in and out of your houses. You don't hear them. They creep in and they creep out. You know that we had this one monk years ago, he was a Gurkha. You know those really, the parts of the British Army, some of the meanest, most dangerous soldiers. Because I remember just a Gurkha I met sort of in Nepal, he said, the only way you know the Gurkhas have been is that you wake up in the morning, you shake your head and it falls off. That means the Gurkhas have been in. But this fellow, as soon as he said he was a Gurkha, and I don't know if we ordained him or he actually was a monk already, but We were a bit concerned about being a Gurkha in Bodhinyana Monastery, but he said I was in the accounts department. Just, you know, doing the pay slips for the soldiers. Really nice guy. But he was a real Gurkha, but, you know, he didn't have one of those knives and stuff. So anyway, I don't know where I got into that one from, the Gurkhas. Where did I go? What was I saying about the Gurkhas? Oh, yeah, just being quiet, not to disturb in the silence. So you can actually come in and go out like a Gurkha, but don't cut off anybody's head, okay? So just you can creep in nice and peaceful and quiet and creep out. It's an exercise in mindfulness and kindness. And also that you are sharing a cottage with 5 other people. So please respect one another. So when you go into your room, don't bang the door. Close it softly. So no one hears you go in and no one hears you go out. And please, don't get up in the middle of the night to make yourself a cup of coffee and get the spoon. And wake everybody up, just stirring your coffee or whatever it is you need in the middle of the night. Please do it slowly. Just you can stir it slowly. Out of compassion for other people. Even better, just I think some huts have little thermoses, and board it beforehand so you don't need to board it in the middle of the night. Whatever, just be kind to the people who you live with in that cottage. But no matter what you do, how careful you are, you always make noise somewhere. And if someone does make a noise and they bang the door, or you hear them sort of stirring up, you know, something into their cup to make a cup of tea in the middle of the night. If they do things like that, please remember the noise vanishes pretty quickly. But when you think about it, that is the part which really disturbs you. Why are they making such a noise? They should know better than this. I'm going to report them to Ajahn Brahm. I'm going to get them thrown out. They can't do this for me. I'm going to get them to go to another cottage. I'm going to blacklist them. I'm going to put them down on the noisy list. And you find the door has finished sounding a long time ago. The problem is the way it echoes in your mind with negativity. So please, when the sound of the banging door stops, at the same time, you should stop complaining about it in your mind. Let it go then. So those are little bits of kindness for this retreat. Of course, this is just scratching the surface of learning how to relax and be peaceful. And I will say much more about this tomorrow. Of course, in the evening time, we have this Q&A time, questions and answers. That is where you take control, because you write down your questions on pieces of paper about the meditation, about some things I've said, about the Dhamma, or about what's happening in the Buddhist world. But please keep it to something which is relevant and not as we have had before, some stupid questions such as, you know, what is the ethics of naked mud wrestlers? Do they break their precepts or not? So some of those things. Oh, come on. What's that got to do with meditation? So little by little we can understand a little bit more about meditation, about peace, about kindness, and just how to make the best use of this center. So, before we finish off, is there anything which I've, you know, important stuff which you've left out? Anything which anybody wants to ask? You don't always have to sit in the same place. You can just try another place to sit if you don't like this place, but if people have left all their stuff here, you know, don't move it around. You're quite welcome, any of you, to sit in this seat, but you'll have to do the chanting and the talks and everything else. I think this is pretty safe. So, but you know, sometimes some people sit maybe one meditation on the seat, another one on the chair, and just, you know, swap it around. And if you can't hear, then please let us know, and we'll just adjust the volume of the sound. Okay, so then we can finish off now. I think tomorrow morning there is some chanting. What time is the chanting? 10 to 6. So 6 o'clock, isn't it? Breakfast at 7, 6:45, yeah. Okay, so you are now free. You always were. This side, this side. Okay. At the end of talks, Q&A, we do, instead of clapping, because that's just so last century, we do like three sadhus. Now, most people do, many of you have been on these retreats before, one of the defining qualities of these retreats is at the end of the day, we give it everything we've got, not just sadhu, 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 because look, that happened to me such a lot in the early days. You give a talk and go, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And it was so depressing. It was amazing I didn't jump off a cliff or something. So instead, we give it everything we've got, three really big sadhus. Okay, now some of you have done this before, so those who haven't, here it comes, the three mega sadhus. Sadhu. Sadhu. And the big one, sadhu. And always three hearts at the end. Ha ha ha. Very good. So anyway, have a beautiful night. You can stay here if you wish. You can go to your room if you wish. The place is yours. Excellent. Have a good night. And you don't have to wait for me to go out. Otherwise, we're waiting all the time. It's whoever gets out first. First out, best dressed, whatever it's called. I don't know. So have a good night. See you in the morning.